The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hi, and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. This week, Akilah Hughes joins to talk about Aunt Becky's schadenfreude-tastic college bribery scandal. Then Tian Tran, Grace Parra, and Michaela Watkins are in studio with me to talk about all the ways gossip is destructive and seductive. And then, as always, the hills will die on. Just to start with a little housekeeping, if you want to submit a hill you'll die on, you can record a 30-second voice memo on your phone and send it to hysteria@crooked.com. Also, merch-wise, guys, we hear you. You want merch. We are working on it, I promise you. And as soon as we have updates about more specifics, I will let you know, but we are definitely working on it. Let's get to it. Hi, Akilah.
Hi there.
There you are.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I am good. I just like really overslept this morning. I thought daylight savings time was working out for me. And then now I'm over it. I'm like, oh God, I canceled on like three friends this morning. I'm like, I'm sorry, guys. I can't wake up. I'm dead.
You gotta listen to your body, man. You gotta listen to your body. Yesterday I was sleeping peacefully and a dog ran across my face.
Oh my gosh, I read about that on Twitter. Are you okay? Do you have peripheral vision anymore?
I'm totally fine. I still can't quite see all the way peripherally out of my right eye, but it's fine. It was
Jesus.
The main reason I keep telling the story is because like the sentence, a dog ran over my face is just like a funny, it's something I've never said before. It's like, ooh, this is a new combination of words that I've never ever uttered in my life. So it's like the novelty of the experience of having a dog run over your face and the experience of telling people that you had a dog run over your face. It's just fun.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah.
I think the dog felt pretty bad. The dog didn't mean to. He's a good boy.
I hope that he's sorry.
he's very sorry. Akilah, the Germans have some good words. One of them, Zeitgeist. I really like Zeitgeist. Kindergarten, very descriptive. But I think my favorite is Schadenfreude.
Same, hard same.
Schadenfreude, happiness at misfortune of others, shameful joy. And I felt it in waves yesterday.
Same. I'm trying to disguise it, but I really cannot.
We're both over here like giggling about people getting arrested. And it's funny because you and I are like both like, please arrest fewer people. Okay, actually arrest these people.
Okay, I'll make a few exceptions.
Okay, yes, actually arrest these people. Yesterday, 50 people nationwide were arrested in the largest college admissions scam ever prosecuted by the DOJ, dubbed Operation Varsity Blues. Operation Varsity Blues. Have you seen the movie? I never watched that movie. All I know is that there's like a whipped cream bra and a guy dies from getting hit on the head. But like, what?
I have seen it. So I'm from the South. You're from the Midwest. I'm from the South, where every pep rally, they would do like the cheers and chants from the movie. So it made me very happy that this was something that just had to keep coming back. Like there's not been another college movie since 1999.
Totally. It's a throwback. And you know that millennials were involved in this prosecution. If it's called Operation Varsity Blues, this is our Schadenfreude college admissions scandal case.
It is.
So the people, including the people that are among the people that were arrested, were 2 SAT ACT administrators, 1 exam proctor, 9 coaches at elite schools, 1 college administrator, and 33 parents, including Felicity Huffman and Aunt Becky and Mr. Aunt Becky, fashion designer Massimo Giannulli. William H. Macy, who is Felicity Huffman's husband, was not charged, but he's named in the indictment. So here's
also, just to add to that, yeah. It is his birthday today.
Oh, no.
I'm telling you, this story gets better and better. I mean, worse and worse, but also better and better.
Right, right. It was a huge bust, and it netted a lot of people besides the famous names. You know, a lot of like CEOs, people who had their own consulting companies, financial dudes, all kinds of people. And what happened?
Napa Vineyards.
Oh, beautiful.
Wellness companies.
Chef's kiss, you know? Chef's kiss. So what happened was these parents were engaging in business with a fake charity run by a guy named Rick Singer. The charity was called Edge College and Career Network LLC. And the fake charity basically allowed kids who did not deserve to be in elite schools to get in. And it did that by bribing coaches, assigning doubles to take tests for the kids, and bribing test proctors and also bribing college administrators. What's really funny to me about this is like every step of the way, Rick Singer was like, you know what? It's crimey, but not crimey enough. Are there other crimes? Like, can we throw in some other crimes? Fake charity. That's pretty shitty. That's a shitty thing to do. But like, how about we also bribe coaches to take spots from kids that deserve those spots? Like,
yeah,
good God.
And like, beyond that, like Photoshop photos of your children playing a sport that they don't even know how to play.
Yes.
Like the desperation. I mean, it couldn't be me. I'm just saying.
That was a water polo player, correct? Correct. That was a kid,
yeah.
Well, a non-water polo player who was trying to project.
A kid posing with a stick.
Do they have sticks in water polo? It seems real dangerous. I think it's just hands. It's hands.
Isn't it? See, that's the thing. I could never get away with the scam because I have no idea.
there's like a Photoshop picture of Akila playing playing lacrosse.
Rugby in the water.
Yeah, it's like Akila's playing lacrosse, but she's just drinking a can of LaCroix. And it's like, no, that's not the sport.
Close.
How did you feel when you read this story? Like, walk me through Akila's yesterday morning.
Oh, man. It was a wave of emotions. It was like, first I saw that Lori Loughlin was trending. And I'm like, oh, Aunt Becky's dead. But she wasn't dead. So I was immediately pleased by the fact she wasn't dead. But then I was immediately like, this is ridiculous. Like, I went to Berea College in Kentucky, and they admit students, like they have an income cap. Like you have to be below a certain income to get in, and you have to work on campus. And like, I still took out student loans. And so I'm not surprised to find out that all of these very privileged, very rich, exceedingly white people are, you know, bribing their kids into college. I just thought, you know, initially I was like, well, you could always donate a building, like right. 500 grand to a person. Like, I feel like bribing your way into college is only illegal if you're just very stupid.
Right.
And so I was doubly incensed at, you know, okay, fine, you're going to commit a crime, but like, you can't even do that, right? Like,
yeah.
Neither you nor your child should ever be admitted to any good school or even a bad school. Let's be real.
Right. I feel like they need to attend like the school of life or like the school of hard knocks or the school of having to get a job and get an apartment for a couple years or the school of going to community college, which is perfectly fine. And then transferring after a couple of years. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's just
just don't go to college. Like these kids are so rich. And like Lori Loughlin's daughter is a very famous YouTuber. She had no interest in going to school, as you saw on her Twitter account. And yet that's who you're going to drop 500 grand for? I mean, listen, I get it. I don't have kids, so maybe that's what you do for your kids. But she didn't seem especially appreciative.
Yeah. You know, it seemed to me that a lot of this wasn't about the kids at all. The kids didn't even know is the thing.
Oh, wow.
Like the kids, you had to know if you're like, wait a second, I'm real fucking dumb. Why am I going?
Yeah.
You know,
like I didn't take the SAT.
Hey.
I'm on, like, I literally can see that I have a scholarship for a sport I've never played.
Right.
I mean,
but that could be just part of being dumb.
I just have a hard time believing the kids are that dumb.
Yeah. You know? I mean, that could be part of it. You're not dumb, and neither am I. So I don't know what it's like. But one thing that, you know, the kids didn't know. And one thing that I thought hearing about this, aside from the basic, like, you know, I think a lot of people kind of regressed to this righteous indignation feeling that they had when they were applying to colleges and trying to figure that shit out for themselves. It's like, I had to work hard. I had to do this. A lot of people were going back there yesterday. And I was thinking about how, you know, like you said, Akila, the parents are the ones who seem to care about the kids. It seems like a vanity project for the parents to have the kids go to a school that they deem good enough. Like, it seems like Lori Loughlin and her husband were paying $500,000 to make their daughter into somebody that she wasn't. They were like, we want her to be someone who wants to go to college. But she's like, nah, I just kind of want to, I want to do my makeup into a webcam, you know, which is fine. It just takes somebody's spot who wants to go to USC. So, what do you think is going to happen to these rich people who bribed their kids into schools the illegal way, as opposed to, you know, the Kushner way, which is perfectly legal?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I saw that that Felicity Huffman's lawyer made basically a small statement yesterday that was like, look, she's going to get, like, she shouldn't have to pay bond, even though they did pay bond. She didn't have to, she's not going to become this like international pariah. Like, you're not going to make the story into that. And I'm like, actually, I think that there should be an example made. Like, I have a real hunch that since these people are very rich and beloved characters from many shows and movies, that they're probably not going to do real jail time. But I do think that, like, the school of public opinion, all that stuff. The court of public opinion, rather, should absolutely rake them across the coals. It's really unfair, and we're living in a time when people are finally really talking about what privilege means, and it's not always like everything was handed to you. But in this case, it's absolutely everything was handed to you.
Right. You know, beyond just the part that it's like, well, this is a symptom of exactly what this huge problem is, which is that rich people can just buy whatever they want without earning it. And America has never been a meritocracy, obviously. But it's also like according to the Crooked newsletter yesterday pointed this out. This is probably a bigger political issue than we realized just yet, because the president's family is a prime example of people who probably didn't deserve to get into the schools that they got into. Jared Kushner, for example. Don Jr., I cannot imagine him going toe-to-toe with a kindergartner that will one day go to Penn, much less somebody who is currently at Penn. It's like rich dumbasses that can just run roughshod over admissions and stuff is going to be a perennial problem in American higher education. And the illusion of meritocracy is something that leads to generations of heartbreak and inequality. So, I'm looking forward to seeing this all play out even more. I want more people to get arrested. More.
Honestly, yeah. I'm like, okay, throw the whole system away. Also, get rid of our student loans. We pay, like, we're still paying for college, and she paid just to get in. Like, come on. Come on.
Right.
I don't have 500 grand. Someone should pay off my student loan. I went there. I did the work.
I think that's a great idea. Akila for president.
Thank it's you.
Just,
wow.
She's just running for president on the platform. Somebody pay off my student loans. Please.
If you can I'll drop out of the race if somebody does it, honestly.
If you can afford bribes, somebody can afford to pay my student loans off. Well, we're going to get more into this in a future episode of Hysteria, but I wanted to move on to one more story that I just love. This is sort of a week of scammers, I feel. Mm-hmm. And I just, everybody loves a good scam story. I don't believe that this is real, but I just love thinking about it. This past weekend, the hashtag fake Melania was trending. Because the woman who appeared in Alabama alongside President Trump and his enormous pants did not appear to be his wife. She didn't quite look the same as Melania. And so people believed there was a hashtag that was like, oh, it's a body double. She was wearing big sunglasses. You know, she was kind of acting a little different. And so, sure, why not? What do you think of this conspiracy theory, Akila?
I mean, I'll go on record. I don't think that was Melania. Like, she just didn't have as strong of a chin as Melania. And I think that's the real tell, you know? Like, it's not like Melania would suddenly have a weaker chin.
Right. Well, you're the chin chin expert now as someone
exactly,
who recently
I got injured. I had a real chin-jury last week, for those listening. You listened to that. And I now have, I've looked at more chins in the past week to see what's normal, to know if my chin is swelling still. And I know that is not, that's just not Melania. And you know what's nuts about it is like, I mean, I don't know that that's necessarily illegal, but it does sort of point to how sloppy this White House is. Like every day they do something where I'm like, if Obama did this, that'd be the end of his career. And this is just like number 798. Like, what is happening? I don't know. I don't know who that woman was.
Well, on one hand, I'm not going to go as far as you went and say that I think it was definitely a fake Melania, because like sometimes I'll look at a picture of myself from one day and I'm like, wow, my face looks real puffy. And other days I'm like, who is that beautiful woman? But it's mostly the former, not the latter. The reason that this is even a theory is because this White House just lies constantly. And Donald Trump is somebody who's pulled some like moves like this in the past. Like he used to call New York City tabloids disguised as his own assistant, who is named John Barron. And then years later, he went on to have a child that he named Barron, which is the weirdest. Our president is just like deeply weird, and he does deeply weird things. And while I am not positive that the people who surround the president would allow a fake to masquerade as the first lady, that sort of a stunt is weird enough that I believe the president would try it. Because he's a fucking weird guy. He's a weird guy. All right. Well, I think that's all the time we have for the news. Do you have anything final to add before we get to our Hysteria vision board?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think the scamming is probably the best the internet has been since Donald Trump got elected. And so if this is what has to happen, people going down or people speculating about other people's scams, then I'm here for it. I haven't felt so good. I mean, I woke up late, but I haven't felt so physically just relieved. I'm like, I knew something was up.
Yeah.
So, yes. Please keep discovering scammers and putting them on blast.
It really does feel good. It feels very cathartic. Okay. Let's get to the Hysteria Vision Board for Women's History Month. Potential ads. First, Senator Stephanie Flowers of Arkansas. Did you see this video this weekend?
Yes.
Okay, so Senator Stephanie Flowers, a Democrat from Arkansas, of course, gave a powerful, impassioned, and emotional response to a white lawmaker who wanted to silence her in a debate about a stand your ground gun law. The clip has gone viral. In the clip, she pointed out that children of color have to go around the world feeling endangered because of laws like this. And she was mad. She was really, really emotional and really mad. And it felt great to watch a woman just unload like that. I thought it felt great. What'd you think of it, Akila?
I mean, I just think it's really important. I can only say so many times how unprecedented the times we're living in are. And the one sort of ray of hope is that people are feeling, I mean, I don't think emboldened is the word, but I think brave. I think that she was like, you know what? This is my chance to say how I really feel, how things really are for so many people. And she really sort of seized the moment. I think, the reason that went viral is because it is so touching and so relatable and so powerful. And yet I think a lot of people feel like it's maybe people are being dramatic. Maybe it's not so bad. And to have someone boldly spell it out to the face of someone who can actually do something about it is just like, talk about catharsis, you know?
Right. It also, removes
scam week, it's spa week.
Right. It removes like plausible deniability from people who want to kind of ignore the like civil, like at a inside voices that are talking about it. They're just like, oh no, I didn't know it was a problem. It's like, no, it is. This woman is yelling that it is a problem because it is a yellable problem. And it was really, it was awesome to see her do that. Second addition to the vision board, Carolee Schneeman. She was a feminist performance artist. She died at age 79 this past week. She died of breast cancer, which she'd had for 2 decades. She'd done a ton of really in-your-face crazy shit. She had a 1964 performance called Meat Joy, which had the appearance of an orgiastic free-for-all with men and women, including the artists, rolling around on the floor in bikini briefs, slathering each other with blood-red paint and clutching dead fish and chickens. This is what my parents thought New York City was before, I think, I moved there.
I mean, they're not wrong. It's kind of that.
It is a little, I mean, that's basically the C line. That's a C train. For sure. She also used to film herself having sex with her husband, and they edited the footage into a film called Fuses, which they showed at a film festival, and attendees at the film festival, mostly male, got mad because it wasn't pornographic enough.
Wow.
Yeah, they saw it as a tease. But she's had this incredible life. She's been a figure of division and discussion. And I think that's probably all we can hope for is, as people who are trying to make a difference in the world, is to leave a mark and have people talking about you after you die. So, Carolee Schneeman, RIP.
Oh, wow. Pour one out for the homie.
Exactly. Akilah, thank you so much for joining me again. And looking forward to having you on the next time.
Lovely.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. Bye. Talk to you then.
Stick around. We've got more hysteria for you after the break. Welcome back to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. Now we get to the part of the show where we talk for a long time about a thing that we've wanted to talk about for a long time. Personal political. This week with me, I have actress, writer, and Black Sabbath super fan, Grace Parra.
That's me! Grace. I am a Black Sabbath super fan. I don't know that I could say that until this last week.
Yes.
But man.
You became one.
Became one that night.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So Grace and I on Friday, with our boyfriends, and there's like a lot of people, went to a sold out show for a Black Sabbath cover band.
Yes.
And the lead singer was a girl.
Yeah.
The girl from Dirty Projectors.
Yeah.
Oh. And she was awesome.
She was amazing.
And then there was like one of the guitarists was Nick from the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, the one with the, yeah.
Really? Yeah, it was unbelievable. They did not come out until like 11:30. And I do appreciate time management when it comes to
time to get there.
That's
too late.
I got there. We got there like 9. I agree. Oh, we got there at like 9.
I had to take my contacts out because they dried out too much. I had to take my contacts out, and then I came out of the bathroom and I couldn't see. And I couldn't find my boyfriend. And I, like, the next day, I was also kind of drunk. And the next day, I was looking at my text and I was like, Josh, I can't see anything. Where are you?
We just assumed that Erin and Josh left. And then Erin, it turns out, was just taking her contacts out.
I was
out.
Taking my contacts out.
What a bold move.
I know.
Yeah, that
when you emerge in your slippers.
Right.
Robe.
A moo-moo.
Also, I love that Josh and Niall are besties. Very sweet.
Now they're texting each other all the time.
Yeah, it's great.
It's great. Second up, we have comedian, writer, and dog mom. Michaela Watkins.
Oh, hello.
Yay. How's the dog?
How's Jeff? He's good. He's really good. I know. It's his name is Jeff, and my husband's name is Fred. And so people are always like, your husband has a dog name.
Do you ever get mad at him and say Jeffrey?
Your dog has a husband name.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so and also he's, you know, got pole position in the bed now, so I just wake up. And I just like smooch and cuddle and just caress the dog. And yeah, it's very, everything is topsy turvy. But they look exactly alike if you ever look at what my husband and my dog look like. They have like, I have a type.
Oh my goodness.
That's fantastic.
Oh, that's amazing. Third up, we have actor, writer, and woman who won't drink something called Business Bitch, Jen Tran.
Yeah. I saw it on a menu and I won't order it out
what
of principle.
What is Business Bitch?
It was.
I mean, good for you. And what is it?
Thank you. It was just like a drink at this bar in WeHo. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what's in it. I didn't even look because just, I'm sorry, on principle, I just can't be like, excuse me, I'll have one of the business, bitch. I just couldn't do it.
What was really funny is that Tien and I talked, we were like, can we do this? Can we do the business, bitch? And Tien was like, no. And I was like, I don't think I can, but the ingredients sound delicious. And then Megan Gailey shows up and she goes, I'll have a business, bitch.
That's Megan. I love that.
Yeah, that is. And I was like, oh, you know what?
Did you end up, you didn't order it?
No.
Okay. What was in it?
I ended up ordering it later.
You did.
And
you
it was
did.
It was great. It was like pink.
Was it all business?
It was 100% business.
Mm-hmm.
It was business, bitch.
Business in the front.
Business, bitch. Party in the back.
Speaking of bitch, bitching and related topic. This week, we're going to talk about something that we've all done, we've all participated in, gossip. And I wanted to use as a jumping off point, our co-host, Alyssa Mastromonaco, has a book that just came out called So Here's the Thing. And if you haven't read it, it's great. I devoured it in like one sitting, mm-hmm. two sittings, but it's great. And in my head, I heard her voice in my ear and it was just like so charming. And Alyssa's just the best. But she has an essay in there about gossip that I thought was a lot more nuanced than a lot of takes about gossip. So a lot of times when you read things about gossip, it is kind of finger wagging, like, don't do it. It's women being cunts to each other and nobody should, you know, it's bad, bad, bad. But then you have other takes that are like, well, actually, it's a way that marginalized people reclaim power for themselves mm-hmm. through exchanging information. And that's very, you know, freshman seminar, but I can see that being true.
Mm-hmm.
Alyssa's is very nuanced. Alyssa's take on gossip is basically like, gossip is seductive. It's unavoidable. And sometimes it helps people who are not in power to reclaim it.
Mm-hmm.
But also there are certain things you shouldn't gossip about because you can fuck people's lives up.
Mm-hmm.
So coming from that kind of nuanced place, I wanted to kind of bring it to the floor and start with you, Michaela.
Yeah.
What has been your experience with gossip and the way that it works in the way that women socialize?
Well, I have this physiological response to gossip, which is anytime anybody says to me, oh, I'm going to tell you something, but you have to promise not to tell anybody else, I have a feeling like my nipples get erect. I sweat.
Are you turned on?
The way that people are probably turned, you know.
It's
I
seductive.
Say like people are probably turned on during sex. I'm not.
One day we'll find out, Michaela.
I hope to know that someday. No, but seriously, like it is similar to the same kind of turned on, you know, or probably that moment when you get like 2/3 of through a glass of wine and you're just like, yeah, and it'll never be better than this moment right now. And it's true. It will never be better than that moment right in that moment, because no matter what they say, it's never going to feel as good as when somebody says, hey, I have to tell you something. I can't tell anybody else. I lose my shit. I just love it. And I know that that's a bad feeling. Like when my whole dashboard lights up like that, I know what I'm embarking on is not good. So the way that, you know, it has kind of gone through so many manifestations in my life. I would say earlier it was about like fitting in, right? I'm normalized because you feel this way and you feel this way and then I feel that way. And then it was like, thank God I'm not that person that we're mm-hmm. talking about. And then it became empowered, right? Like, I'm not crazy, right? Our boss is a total fucking dick, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it became this false sense of care, you know, like, I'm very worried about, you know, they're not eating. And then you're just like, I know. And you're just like, fucking, they're so skinny and beautiful. I know. And they're not eating. And then now it's sort of transformed into something else in my life, which is, it's more of a cautionary tale. It's more of like, beware, like that guy is handsy or that, you know, you may not want to work with this person because they have a rage problem or blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. So. That is a really interesting point because I was talking about this yesterday with somebody and I came to the realization that the whole Me Too moment
mm-hmm.
is like the weaponization of gossip, like making mm-hmm. formalizing gossip like allowed people who were at a lower social rung to assert power over like people that were higher up than them.
Mm-hmm.
And it also made me think about how, you know, gossiping sometimes is in a way an admission to yourself and the people around you that like we're on the same tier.
Yeah.
And when you're like a boss or when you're like in any way, when you have more power than people don't gossip with you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They gossip about you.
They gossip about
you. You become the subject. Yeah.
Have you ever walked into a room? Well, this is a Mean Girls quote, but have you ever walked into a room and had everybody just suddenly shut up because they were talking about you, Grace?
Yeah, actually, sometimes I think I've been in a place where I don't mind if people gossip about me for a number of reasons. I'll give you guys this is not to get sad or a little bit dark here, but sometimes gossip can be very beneficial in getting information across, information that you don't necessarily want to talk about yourself. Like my dad's been having some health problems, and I have a circle of friends in Houston, and I told a couple of friends and I gave them consent to go tell other people. I basically was like, I want you guys to talk about this. It's stuff that I just don't feel like having this conversation 20 times over, but I know that we're friends with this same circle of people that I would appreciate if they knew. Mm-hmm. And you know, the circle of people that I wanted to know about it found out about it that way, and it became a useful funnel of information that wouldn't have existed if I had to tell people one-on-one myself. So there's something that's like pragmatic about gossip too. If somebody doesn't want that information, if you don't want the responsibility of having to tell that to other people, mm-hmm. there's a mystique about it that's kind of interesting too. Yeah. Also, I have the question: can you gossip with yourself? Because I remember like I did this. Tell me.
Go on.
Tell me if you guys have been in this situation. I was
alone in a basement.
They'll say he wouldn't even hurt a fly.
I was trying to think about the first time that I remember gossip being a part of my life. And I remember distinctly being in sixth grade, and I was in the play The Wizard of Oz. And I had been cast as the Wicked Witch of the West. And now this is something that, like, my whole...
You're so much more Glinda than Wicked Witch
of
the West.
You think so?
I do.
I'll take that as a compliment. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Well, Wicked Witch of the West was interesting, and I was excited. I was like, I'm on my path towards becoming a character actress. This is great. but a little part of me was like, I wonder why I didn't get Dorothy. You know? And then I remember telling myself, like, oh, Grace, you don't want that part because the girl who got it is like, fine, but she's very boring. And I remember telling myself, gossiping with myself, that the reason that somebody else got a bigger part than me was because she was boring and I wouldn't want that part anyway. Mm-hmm. And it weirdly like made whatever twinge of jealousy or envy that I have go away.
It was self-soothing.
Yeah. It was self-soothing. Yeah.
Here's something that I was thinking about as I was like researching for this was that, you know, gossip seems to be characterized as very female. Tian, have you found that gossip is something that women do with and about each other, or do men do it too?
I think everyone gossips. Gossip has, you know, in society has been stereotyped as, I think, as a female trait, as like a bad thing, that like that's the weapon that women use since we're not like physically violent. It's like insidious, it's like
secrets. We're emotionally violent.
We're emotionally violent. And I think that's like the stereotype that's used. Mm-hmm. But men, everyone gossips. I think that like men gossip just as much as women.
Well, I think you're so right about that. And I even have a difficult time defining gossip because I don't know what the difference is between gossip and word of mouth. Like nowadays, especially in entertainment, mm-hmm. people get jobs by word of mouth.
If your nipples get hurt.
If your nipples...
Just follow your nipples to career success. I think that's an interesting... The men gossiping just as much as women thing is something that I'm not sure... that I agree with. I mean, I think that men love gossip, but they funnel it into things like sports gossip. Like,
yeah.
I am dating a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, and he is, like, obsessed with, like, team. Is they gonna trade this guy? Or, like, this dude's sad. He doesn't want to throw the ball in Pittsburgh anymore. He wants to throw the ball in another town, and it makes me mad. And, you know, it's like, but it's like sports radio, sports talk podcasting is enormous.
Yeah.
And it is a place where, I guess, maybe men aren't sitting there like, oh my God, you know, somebody looks like they didn't get sleep last night. You know, like they're not coming into the break room saying that to each other at work. But I feel like it's maybe compartmentalized because they don't need it.
Yeah,
like women.
I think we gossip where we feel out of control.
Yeah.
And in the workspace, you know, I think as it's been sort of, you know, geared towards more of a, you know, male centric kind of dynamic there, I don't think that they feel out of control or their place is vulnerable or threatened. And, you know, through time, in history, for hundreds of thousands of years, I think there was one article that was passed around that was like in the 1400s, women were allowed to berate their men and sit around and gossip in the kitchen. And there's art depicting paintings of women mm-hmm. sitting around in kitchens being like, you know, basically doing the headlines with each other, the news, you know? Mm-hmm. And then in the 1600s, you know, that was completely obliterated and outlawed because there was this threat of women got together and compared notes that it was highly threatening to the power centers. Mm-hmm. And so there were, you know, burning witches at stakes and giving them tongue, you know, devices that would keep them from speaking and things like that. So when we're
we would all get that tongue device.
Oh, we would right. all get it. And so and now, you know, although I, you know, I did go through a phase, if I may divert for 1 second. Mm-hmm. But when I was in the Groundlings, which is kind of a sort of a competitive, the school, the mm-hmm. school part, you know, you have to get voted in and all this kind of stuff. And it's like the worst kind of way to sort of feel okay is because there's this group of your peers who are voting on you constantly. And so you're not just your work, but if you're an asshole, you mm-hmm. know, that's going to like move through the chain. And I remember my friend Amy and I were in the last level before the main company. And we were both feeling so just cruddy, you know? We just felt like it was so competitive and we felt like we were working so hard. You're writing a new show every week and, you know, you just had to constantly be feeling out the social dynamics and make sure it was cool to write with this person or that person. And we said, you know, I feel really bad about myself when I gossip because these are our friends, you know? And so let's make a pact where we don't gossip for 2 weeks, where we're not going to say anything. I mean, it can't be anything. It can't be anything, mm-hmm. like literally anything that we wouldn't say to that person's face, you would never say. And we did it for 2 weeks. And after those 2 weeks, we kind of checked in and we're like, I feel really good. Mm-hmm. I feel my self-esteem feels really good because obviously in the back of our minds, we thought if we're not talking about somebody, they're not talking about us. But at the same time, I'm with Alyssa, is that there are so many times where I feel like by keeping us separate, by keeping women separate from talking to each other about our experiences and our and what happened to us at work or on a set or something like that, they keep the power in certain places of the work pyramid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's us, like, I think gossip is a refusal to live by the rules of the people that are in charge to an extent. But on the other hand, yeah, it feels great to just not, like, there's something that feels so dirty about knowing that you just were, because I don't like to talk shit about people, but I do that kind of backdoor gossip thing mm-hmm. where I'm like kind of masking my shit talking in concern.
Oh, yeah.
I do that sometimes. And then when I'm around them, I feel like, you know, when you go home and when you come home and the dog's like, I didn't do anything. And you're like, oh, no, you haven't seen anything yet. But, you know, the dog did something.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like
I feel like Jeff does that all the time.
Yeah. Like, I didn't eat the paper towels. Like,
how dare you? Jeff would never.
It's this little coy attitude.
But like it's but I think that I feel I have like a very guilty conscience. And when I'm around people that I've done like the backdoor shit talking. What a disgusting.
That's the name of the episode. Backdoor
shit talking.
But whenever I've
done front door shit talking is much harder.
Unsanitary.
Oral shit talking.
A-U-R-A-L. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But you know, I'll feel guilty and it's just like it's just easier. It's sort of like lying. You know, it's just mm-hmm. easier and there's less things to keep track of if you just don't do it. Like, who is allowed to know this? Who isn't allowed mm-hmm. to know this? Who can I tell?
The little rules that we set up for ourselves.
Right.
I set those rules up for myself all the time because I will say that if I'm having a conversation with my boyfriend about something, that it's not gossip because mm-hmm. we just share everything with each other. So yeah. it's mm-hmm. sharing.
Safe
it's
space.
Not gossiping. Mm-hmm. It's a safe space. Exactly. Or if it's like friends from high school or something, well, you know, they all know each other, so it's fine. We just set these little rules up for ourselves.
Yeah. Physicality. It's like you never, ever, ever talk about somebody because of something they can't control physically.
Mm. That's a good rule.
A good one. Yeah,
I think that the rule for me is that it's more of a like hardcore pornography, like I'll know it when I see it sort of thing. Like if it makes me feel dirty to know it, I don't really want to pass it along.
Yeah.
Tian, do you have rules for yourself beyond?
Well, since my girlfriend is long distance, so we've been trying to not gossip as much in our like FaceTiming and just try to like keep it positive and not go into a negative space just because we only get to talk to each other like a couple hours, a couple hours a day. That's actually
a lot. That's really sweet.
Yeah, we've taken our gossip down to 2.5
hours. But yeah, that is something that we've tried of just like, you know, I only get to talk to you for like an hour in the evening. Let's try to keep it positive just so that like it's a nice conversation for ourselves since I don't get to see her that often.
Have you found that it makes you feel like better?
Yeah.
Have you found that you leave the conversation? Does it take effort?
It does take, I mean, so far it's just turned into us just kind of recounting our days and like she is a much more positive, like she is like positive and doesn't really speak poorly about or tries not to. And I like love to dish sometimes. And so I've gotten better at like, you know, if there's something that I wanted to tell her that was like inherently negative, I have been getting better at leaving that out of a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And she's in academia.
Yes.
Which is another gossip heavy industry.
Oh my God. Sure. Yes.
That is so dependent on like in the groundlings. Like if you're a dick, like you're probably.
Everyone knows.
Yeah. Everybody knows. Mm-hmm. And maybe some people will plant information that you're a dick. And so it's probably better to just like have a good.
Yeah.
Academia makes me think of this quote that I meant to bring up, which is small minds discuss people. Average minds discuss events. Great minds discuss ideas. Oh, Grace Parra. That's a Grace Parra quote.
I thought you were going to say great minds discuss Rick and Morty. That does sound like something a Rick and Morty fan.
That definitely does.
Even though I love Rick and Morty, I do not love the fans. So I'll put this question to the group too. Have you seen gossip do actual damage to people?
I've seen gossip do damage to a friendship of mine. Actually, Michaela, you were talking about the evolution of gossip becoming something that you do out of concern for other people. Mm-hmm. I heard directly from a friend, sort of former friend of mine, female friend, that she had gotten out of this relationship and that this relationship she'd been abused, if not physically, at least emotionally. And then that relationship was over and I was relieved as a friend. Like, thank God you don't have to put up with this abuse. Then she drunkenly told me that she had started hooking up with this ex again. And so out of concern, genuine concern, mm-hmm. I spoke with mutual friends of ours about it and said, like, did you hear this is happening? They had not heard about it. And I was like, well, I think it's something we should just keep our eye on because, I mean, the way that she's expressed it to us, she's been abused. And that's something that I don't want her to have to go through again. Mm-hmm. This friend found out about that. And even though there were other people discussing this, she linked it back to me, got really mad at me. And our friendship's never been the same since. And it really came out of a place of concern. But I don't know. I didn't know what to do in that situation. Maybe I pose this as a question. Did I do the right thing by talking to other friends about a friend who's potentially in a dicey situation like that? Should I
like
kept my mouth shut? That
I just
didn't feel
like
right
I always take my temperature on where something is coming from.
Yeah.
If it feels in any way that it ventures in any way into lasciviousness, where it feels like, is there a sense in any way, shape, or form that I'm veering away from genuine concern or like trying to get my tribe of friends to rally around this person and support this person, does it in some way feel like kind of almost like a joy to be like, finally, something fucking interesting is happening in my friend circle.
Right,
you know,
like, right.
If it starts to feel at all like that, then I think, you know, you're out of the space.
Yeah.
I worked with a guy, or I was about to take a job from a man who, a friend of mine, who in a very genuinely concerned way said to me, I'd be careful with this person because I know someone who worked with them and they had a really terrible experience for this reason. Mm-hmm. And it kind of went against the grain of everything I sort of talk about and stand for in terms of women and their safety and health in the workplace. And so I was ready to turn it down. And then I saw the person. And then I found out the person that they were talking about actually was coming back to go work with that person again. And when I saw that person, I said, how do you like working with them? They're like, oh my God, I love him. He's the best. So
what?
I almost missed out on a job. I think it was, I think that's an example of, because I know this friend of mine who said this to me meant well, I think that's a perfect example of how the phone, the operation, the operator game gets really broken.
Right.
I've also seen just like from being in the comedy community that mostly women and like black and brown women will not get jobs or get put on things because there's like a gossip of them being difficult to work with, mm-hmm. which I think is bullshit and is born out of like you know, women who are marginalized speaking up for themselves in situations that they is like predominantly like a white male situation.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so I've seen that a lot. And I know that the like Chicago comedy community is doing much better at being like, okay, we can't be doing this to women, especially women of color, mm-hmm. and not allowing them the same opportunities because they spoke up for themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's being characterized as like difficult. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that goes along with this idea of poisoning the water, because gossip can be weaponized mm-hmm. into something that deliberately is meant to hurt people or mm-hmm. that is sort of just an agent of chaos. I had a situation once. I think, you know, there's one thing to be like,
to say it.
Yeah. It's like this person is bad and difficult to work with. And I usually don't trust that unless I myself have mm-hmm. had interactions with that person. And then I don't really spread it because, you know, kind of in the age of leaking, and having worked for a lot of different journalistic, or not a lot, but a handful of different journalistic organizations, usually I just treat things that I write down as things that could end up on the front page of the Washington Post, mm-hmm. things I say that could end up in a blog post. I mm-hmm. try to be careful. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you just get these like really like fucking chaotic, malignant people
yeah.
who try to like throw it at you. So here's something just bizarre that happened to me.
See, I'm excited about what you're about to tell me.
How are your nipples doing, Mikaela?
They are just, they're holding my coffee.
So like a few jobs ago, I worked for a place that occasionally employed this person who was like a writer, and she had like kind of a weird reputation, but I never had any problem with her. She was like, fine. You know, she was like fine to talk to. She was a lot of fun. And I had another friend who worked at the place, a guy. And one time this guy came up to me at work and was like, can I talk to you for a second? Which is the scariest.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's like,
oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I talk
just
to you for a second? I
was shoot
like,
me
yeah.
right now.
Oh, my God.
Exactly.
And it was like the feeling of like having a slushy just poured into your stomach.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, so can I talk to you? Why? What's going on? And he was like, yeah, I was at a party with this girl. Her name, let's just call her Anne. I was at a party with Anne, and we were like all kind of standing outside, like smoking. And she told everybody, it was like a party full of people that I worked with. She told everybody that you do heroin, Aaron. And like, okay. So
I have to laugh because of the absurdity.
Also,
of
like, yeah, of all the drugs,
yeah.
You know, like that is not my personality. I would do the shit out of some Adderall, but not heroin. Like, come on, yeah. I did, and like I've done acid at a tech conference, and I wrote about it. Like, I've done the requisite amount of
guys.
Drugs.
I do drugs. Okay,
I'm cool. I'm cool. No, it's just like. But what a thing to tell. She just told a bunch of people that I worked.
Did you ever? Did you confront her about it?
No, because it was like one of those things where I was like, you are you're just a pathological liar. And
yeah.
when I come across people like that, there's no reasoning with them. There's no rehabilitating.
Yeah. I mean, do you think there's a version? Because this makes me shudder in fear. Like, I say things off the cuff in a sarcastic way. And what if people didn't read me right?
She's
you
not
know?
Funny, though.
What if I'm like, oh, Aaron. Oh, heroin pants Aaron.
Heroin pants Aaron.
And,
like, to me, that reads as she was clearly doing it because she's jealous of you and wanted to tarnish your reputation.
Yeah. It was really weird, though. It's like, be better, though, you know? Like, be better.
Who would pick a more personality appropriate drug? You
yeah,
know?
Exactly.
So, do you think that guy, the
nobody's
colleague,
buying your heroin,
the colleague is somebody that I trust and have trusted for years, and
okay.
And I eventually heard it from another source that she'd said that, and then she later went on to like do other really weird like.
Did you confront her ever?
Never confronted her. I blocked her on all social media and refused to communicate with her ever.
Really
smart.
I do the like because I think that there are people in the world that abuse credulity and abuse gossip networks that are maybe founded mm-hmm. on with a sense of like empowering people or bonding with each other. And they kind of will dive into those and spread lies.
Bonding.
And it's
bonding.
Like awful.
That's
yeah.
a big one. Like there are people that you see and for some reason it just brings it out in you and you're just sort of like, why am I? But I think what I feel very excited about in my life, if I may share, is I have friends who hold me accountable. So sometimes I want to commiserate with somebody, but I have friends who will say to me like, uh-huh, I hear you. Yeah, that's really fucked up. But can I just tell you something? You know, maybe you need to consider mm-hmm. that they're going through a really hard, you know, and it's just like, yeah, thanks for being the bigger person, the two of us right now, because I needed to vent this thing mm-hmm. out loud. But also I need to be reminded of, you know, that I need to probably, you know, toughen up, cupcake, is kind of what they're sort of saying to me. And I'm lucky I have those people in my life. There's a sense of let ye who has not sinned cast the first stone. And so now gossip, a lot of times I hear things like, oh, so-and-so is like in an emotional affair. And I'm like, yeah, I've been there. You know, not with my husband, not with my husband. I'm very devoted to him. But I, in my life, I have been there, and it's a horrible feeling. And so I don't kind of get off on hearing about somebody's pain.
Yeah, that's
like
such
that,
a good way of thinking of it and trying to like flip the script on bad God. Like on God, I love that. I
think it loses so its novelty at some point.
And then you take the power away from the like seductive nature of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it takes the zing out, and my nipples go flaccid.
Oh, the mug's on the floor.
Oh, we're going to need somebody to clean that up. We're going to, says Aaron, to a room full of nobody whose job it is to clean it up.
Aaron is mainlining heroin right now, so I wouldn't trust anything
Aaron
she says.
Is being real heroin-y. You know when, me. When I was younger, I was still closeted in high school, and there was a rumor that a couple of us on the soccer team were lesbians. Turned out all to be true. But so on the nose, everyone was right. But I remember, as like a defense to that, I started like jumping on the bandwagon of like saying other girls were lesbians.
Nice. Mm. Nice.
You were like the identical Spider-Man comment pointing at the lesbians. Pointing out the lesbians.
No.
You're a lesbian.
I will also say that like the word in gossip, the word in Spanish for gossip is chisme, which is a word that I grew up, my mom always was like, what's the chisme? Let's talk about the chisme. It's almost like a multi-cross-generational way of appealing to different demographics, different people in your family. That it's like a way to start conversations. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's like a cute way to start conversations. Mm-hmm. So there's something that's cultural about gossip too that ties us into multiple generations of women specifically. My dad never asked me what the chisme was, but my mom always did. And to this day, we still gossip.
Well, I think that your comment, Grace, and Tian's comment about women gossiping about each other's sexuality, especially when they're young, is like really interesting because it kind of establishes how gossip can other and marginalize people.
Oh my God, yeah.
And like on one hand, it's a way for everybody to be like, yeah, fuck the boss. We all agree the boss is a dick. Isn't the boss a dick? But on the other hand, it's like, but we can also unite and attack this one person, that we are not this person. And we're like,
and we
that person.
Cannibalize each other.
That's why I think like young boys and men gossip just as much.
Yeah.
Because they like assert that power of like slut shaming women.
Oh,
like, that's for sure.
Anytime in middle school and high school, all the stories that started about young girls who were absolutely put in a bad situation, that it was dudes. It was dudes talking about like the girl who was giving everyone blowjobs or like didn't know how to give blowjobs. It was a lot of blowjob in high school, but it was all perpetuated by like the boys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the boys.
Just to assert their like control over women.
Yep.
Women.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't have been shaming that because they all wanted the blowjobs.
I know.
Exactly.
So
that's why
have been
they
like,
were doing
did you
it.
Hear about this great gal with a wonderful personality and a tendency to give blowjobs?
I remember one story specifically where someone was like, did you hear so-and-so didn't even know what a blowjob was? She just like blew on the dick. And I was like, I had no idea. And I was like, that's crazy. Why would you? What kind of technique is that?
Note to self, never blow on the dick. Never blow on the dick. Never blow on the dick.
Well, that's something that I think also another function that gossip has is like when I was like this kind of sheltered kid, when I would hear gossip, I would be like, note to self, find out what that is.
Yep.
What is this thing? But I think like shame is really, and we'll do a shame episode point in the future. But I think shame and gossip are evil cousins.
If anybody grew up in the Catholic faith, as I did, that will definitely resonate.
We'll get all the Catholics and the Jews together. Dana can come. We've got everybody. But I think that, you know, gossip and shame are sort of like evil, ugly cousins. Mm-hmm. And then the like good cousin of gossip is friendship, which is like it's this weird
fellowship.
It's this weird little Venn diagram overlap that's always going to be complicated. But you know what's cool about it? The Venn diagram overlap is shaped like a vagina.
I love you, Venn diagram. And, you know, it's also, did you guys read Sapiens by chance?
No.
No, but I love this quote, Michaela.
Oh, well, the question is that he poses sort of to everybody is, you know, not why have have humans only, have Homo sapiens only been around for 10,000 years, but why are they the only, you know, human beings that have been around for 10,000 years? Because there's Neanderthals and all these other kinds. And why have they, even though they weren't the strongest and the mightiest, why have they survived? And it's not just that they could say, hey, there's bison over there. It's that they could talk about this imaginary concept. Mm-hmm. So they could be like, you know, I could tell you something about what's happening in the next, you know, tribe over that sort of saves your life. Or, you know, I can say there's a forest fire and now the bison are heading this way.
And
we
can,
imaginary things, not just things that are happening like rock, stone, sky, bridge. You know, we can actually start to build a false fictional narrative about things that aren't actually happening.
Hmm. So gossip, in a way, saves us and kills us slowly. I'm really sorry that we have to wrap up this conversation because this was great. I could sit here for like 3 hours, but as soon as we get off the mic, we're all going to talk shit about all the other co-hosts.
There's like 10 other drugs
that I
know. Let's
all take turns leaving the room.
We're all going to talk shit. No, we're not. We're
Grace, you leave the room now.
7 minutes in hell is you leaving the room and we all sit here talking shit about you when you come back.
And then it goes on air.
We have to take a break, but when we come back, the hills that we will die on. Welcome back. This is a part of the show where we take very staunch stances on things that don't ultimately matter. The hills we'll die on. First, we have a hill from one of our listeners. Let's roll it.
This is Stephanie in Boston, and the hill that I will die on is that people who back into parking spaces are absolute idiots. As far as I can tell, backing into a parking space serves absolutely zero practical purpose, and people who do it seem to have absolutely no ability to drive in reverse whatsoever.
Oh.
It drives me crazy, and people who do it are just plugging up parking lots for the rest of us that can park like normal people.
This is Rich coming from a Boston driver.
That was my first thought, too. I was like, okay, Stephanie in Boston, driving expert over here. The only good driver in Boston. Let's just assume because she listens to history that she's the only good driver in Boston.
Conscientious, aware.
And
hell yes. Hell yeah, that's a good hill. I agree with that.
I just recently re-entered driving as a thing. I didn't drive for like 7 years, and then I went to the DMV and drew a picture of a car, and they're like, here's a license. I feel like I'm just reacquainting myself with what a pain in the ass it is.
And it's so, mostly parking that's a pain in the ass over driving itself.
It's just like having a big metal backpack you can't take inside.
I will say I do like park. I know this is weird, but I do enjoy finding a spot. My nipples get hard when I'm
sure it's gratifying.
Really nice parking spot, and I do it well.
I like the pull through when there's two spots and one spot, you know, you'd have to back out to get out of it. And then the other spot, if you just drive forward a little bit, then you'll be able to drive forward out of a park. I love that.
You know, I'm the daughter of a mathematician, and nobody's allowed to load the dishwasher when I'm at my father's house except my father, because he knows the best way to max out sort of.
Wait,
you know,
I just learned so much about you, Michaela.
That's so much space. Like, you cannot touch his dishwasher. He is just, because everybody does it wrong. And I have sort of that sort of brain where I know how to pack in as much into a space as I, you know, just visualizing
it. The Marie Kondo of parking lots.
Yeah, when I do see people like sort of park all fucked, I get mad about it. Yeah. But I don't have a problem with backing into a spot if it's the right thing to do.
Okay. Good hill, Stephanie. Thank you. If you listeners want to submit your own, you can record a 30-second voicemail and send it to hysteria@crooked.com. I'm going to do the hill I'll die on first. I have to do these every week. So sometimes at the beginning of the show, I'm like, okay, what do I care about? I've already said everything I care about.
Microphones. Microphones are done.
yes. Yeah. One time I did one about the lid of coffee cups because I wear red lipstick all the time.
Yeah.
And they need to be black because otherwise it looks like I've just been Frenching this. here's my hill.
Did you hear about Erin?
She Frenches coffee. So here's mine this week. Succulents, the plants that are allegedly just easy and idiots can keep them alive. I can't.
Yeah, no, they're tough.
I keep killing succulents. I am the Ted Bundy of succulents. I had like this beautiful, there's this really nice nursery, like greenhouse down the street from where I live. It's called Rolling Greens in LA, and it's great. Mm-hmm. And it is, and there's a place called an arrangement bar, and you go and you bring them a container and you're like, fill this with plants. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay. And then they like make a pretty like arrangement for you, and then you pay for it and you leave, and it's great. And I came in and I was like, I'm going to figure out how to make succulents not die. Like when I first moved here, and I brought them a container and they put a whole little row of succulents and it looks so cute. And I brought it back and I put it on my dresser and now they're all fucking dead.
How long did it take?
It took 6 months, but they just, I watched them slowly die. Yeah. And I'm like, I called my mom. I'm like, what do I do? She's really good at plants. And she's like, just don't do anything to them. And so I didn't.
Literally.
And they all died.
Yeah. This is like,
I think they died out of spite.
It's amazing, Erin, because you are my lady goals in every way, shape and form. And yet this is like your Marvel superhero, which is like your superpower is things that can't will slowly die.
Yeah.
Like but that you cannot kill a succulent.
I did it so many times.
Mazel tov.
And things that should not last as long as they do last a very long time. Like I have a cat that's 14 years old and still jumps on top of the fridge and I don't know. Like she's like a Marvel superhero. Anyway, I'm sure I'm going to get a ton of tips. Like the time I took a stance on oregano and some guy who was like, you haven't had real oregano emailed me. I'm going to get a ton of succulents tips. I've heard all of them. They will die if you give them to me. And that's the hill I'll die on this week.
I'm looking up
succulents.
Rolling Greens.
The hill your succulents will die on.
It's great.
It's great. Great. Yeah. Okay.
So up next, I'm going to throw it to Grace.
Okay. My hill this week is I'm actually going to publicly shame people who like this
hard nipples. Item.
Yeah. Michaela's all. Yeah. My gossip this week is I hate fringe on rugs.
Mm. Oh.
Fringe doesn't belong on rugs. I'm looking around. I'm seeing some fringe on a rug right here.
Like even
seeing
a Moroccan rug?
None of it. It's all bad. It gathers hair and dust. Mm. And how do you get it out? You don't is the problem. It looks terrible. It looks like pubes that need to be shaved off. I like a smooth, clean-shaven rug. I don't like fringe on a rug. I'm going to publicly shame anybody
who
does.
Are we still talking about a rug?
We are still talking about an actual rug. I'm trying to find a rug for this room in our house. And there's just so many rugs with fringe on it, and it's terrible in every instance. Fringe generally is pretty terrible. I mean, occasionally it's fine on like a flapper dress, I guess, but everything fringe is bad. Fringe on jackets, fringe festival.
Okay,
yeah. Let's go. Let's go.
Gauntlet.
Let's go.
Oh, holy shit.
I'm the anti-fringe right here.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. That's
you
that's
just
extremely
insulted
normal.
The cast of Nashville.
You insulted my dad's coolest jacket from the late 70s, which was a leather fringe jacket that made my mom have a crush on him.
Bonnie Raitt just
Hayden Panettiere
rolled in her
yep.
massage.
I can't wait. Come after me. But especially fringe on rugs. That is okay. Unacceptable.
Come for Grace, all you fringe heads.
Yeah, come
out
on,
there.
Fringe heads.
Wow.
All right. Let's go. Tien is just aghast.
Tien is aghast. You truly are.
It's cute.
It's point, delightful. Counterpoint. Go.
All right, Tien.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
You are up.
Oh, I had to pick something. So I'm gonna go with I really don't like shirts with the holes where the shoulders
are.
Oh, cool.
Where the shoulders should be.
Shoulder, yeah. Because I don't understand it, and I don't get why that's a style that's been chosen.
Sexy.
Is it, though? It's just like those long sleeves that just have, is it called a cold shoulder?
It's called a cold shoulder.
I didn't even know it had a name.
Yeah.
So you're confused about them, or you?
I don't like them visually.
Like them. Okay.
Do you mostly not like them on a Fox News host, or do you just not like them on anybody?
Both. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just don't like them on anyone, I don't think.
I think it's like, you know, here's my theory on that.
Okay.
I think that fashion has already done all the good stuff that it's going to do. Like in the 1950s, that was the best fashion. Mm. And like there was some stuff in the 70s, like Mary Tyler Moore style clothes. Like that was when fashion
I'm
was.
With you 100%.
That was the last
this.
Time it was good.
Yes.
And like there have been some like Alexander McQueen, like around Y2K, the scary female, like pointy shoulders, wasp looking stuff was really cool.
Yeah.
But
that was cool.
Other than that, there's been no good fashion since the 1950s and maybe the 1970s. And I think that because they need us to buy shit, they're like,
cut the shoulders.
Yeah. What hasn't been around in a while?
Yeah. Like,
it's
what
the opposite of an 80s shoulder pad? No shoulders.
No shoulders.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh, like they've been trying to foist wide leg pants on us now. It's like, no.
Yeah, I tried it. I can't do that one either.
But I think it's just because fashion has run out of ideas. Okay. Can't. Don't. Stand firm
I am standing strong with this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to see your shoulder.
Team Cam.
I don't mind. I don't mind when the cold shoulder shirts show a little décolletage because I love décolletage.
And I like a halter.
Sure.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah. I'm not against. I'm pro shoulder showing, mm-hmm. but I just don't like that there's fabric around.
And then on the arms.
And then on the arms.
Trying too hard.
Trying too hard.
So once you've shown the shoulders, there's no turning back.
You show the whole arm.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
That's fair. Okay, Michaela. What hill are you going to die on?
My hill is that I started watching the wonderful, sort of quirky criminal murder show, Killing Eve.
Oh, yeah. That's my favorite.
So good.
It's great, right? Mm-hmm. Here's my hill. Everybody on that is amazing, is stupendous. I'm enjoying it in a huge way. Why do murder shows and doctor shows always have a character who is like the skeptic? That's so much a skeptic that they're literally just an obstacle. Like they're just like, you know, I think if we do the transplant through the, you know, nose instead of the foot, and they're just like, get out of here with this bad, terrible idea. And it's like, you're saying this to the surgeon or the detective or the whoever that is like your rogue, you know, out of the box thinker who solves all the cases and saves all the people. And consistently it's somebody being like, are you crazy? I'm not going anywhere. No, this case is over. This case is closed. I don't want you opening this case and trying to find out who murdered that girl anymore.
How many episodes in are you?
I'm like 4.5.
Okay.
I accidentally fell asleep in the middle of one last night.
But that character is in every show and every movie.
Every show, every doctor show. And I'm just like, who are you and why are you Mr. Naysayer of epic proportions? Who's like, no, don't you even think about going down the road of trying to find out who murdered that young girl. It's like, why?
I love it.
Why?
It feels like wasted script, like wasted pages. Like when you're writing a script, you're like, okay, I have to have established within one page that these people are in love but can't be together. Mm-hmm. And then like, oh, but now I'm going to give a page to a person that's like, you can't try to be in love.
Yeah. Like, we need an obstacle. Yeah. Well, let's just have them arbitrarily just be like, no, I don't want to have progress.
No, this story can't continue. Yeah. But I want it to. That's great. That's a good hill to
die on. That's a good hill. Yeah. That's a good and now ubiquitous.
It's going to bug me.
Yeah, it
now
is.
It's going to bug me forever.
You're just going to see, like, I'm the chief of this hospital and I can't have you solving cancer.
Oh my gosh, this is a really fun one. Grace, Tien, Michaela, thank you so much for coming to hang out. Thanks to Akilah Hughes for joining me for the news, and there will be more Hysteria next week. Overdone, right? 'Cause girls just wanna have fun. So Annie, get your gun. Give them a-